Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 507. Science Faction, I call BS.
I got some bad news for you today, brother. Your normal science partner, Damien, talked some mad trash to me, and now he's lying unconscious. Now you got the anti-science heel to deal with, brother.
Oh, no, not the anti-science heel. He hates science and loves gritty voices.
I heard you were doing some experimenting and finding results and answering the great questions, and I ain't gonna allow that in my time, brother.
Speaking of your brother, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy, and with me as usually is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado, but it seems like he's been replaced by some kind of comic wrestler character persona, the anti-science heel.
I like how you called me, brother. That's right. I'm tired. This rivalry was fueled by our mother favoring you and your hard facts over me and my hard bullshit. I will win our mother's love by defeating you when I call BS, and then later in the ring, you big coward.
So you guys who haven't listened before, I call BS the game where I read four science news articles, some of which are real, some of which are BS, standing for bad science. They could all be true, all be false, or any combination of there in between. Anti-science heel, are you ready to play?
Remember when we both got arrested because we were profiled by the police, but then our mother only bailed you out of jail? That always stuck with me, brother. Always stuck with me in my craw.
Well, to be fair, you were the one who did commit the crime that we both got arrested for. For me, it was an illegitimate arrest. For you, it was, you know, the right thing to do.
Yeah, I had actually picked you up above my head and used you as a weapon to throw at an officer, and we both got arrested for attacking an officer.
Yes, I got arrested for being a projectile that was thrown at an officer.
Which some could argue was the more dangerous thing to be in that situation. They should have locked you up and threw away the key, brother.
I mean, I guess you could make that argument, though. In terms of guilt, I would still say I would pale in comparison to you. My guilt.
Oh, I don't feel any guilt. I do not feel any guilt.
My guilt at that point was just my aerodynamic shape. That was the thing I had done wrong.
I told you not to wear the speed suit before you went out.
All right, let's go right on to I Call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
All right, article number one. A man was recently treated for severe anaphylactic reaction to cold air. Damien, is this science or bad science? Sorry, anti-science heel. Is this science or bad science?
Thank you for respecting the fourth wall, brother. Respect that.
Unlike your respect for San Diego police officers not getting hit by 200 plus pound men.
Do not respect that, brother. All cops are bastards in this science reporter's eyes. I'm going to say this is science. This happened to my partner, the rapidly anti-vaccine Polio El Fuego.
He got cold and had an allergic reaction?
He's actually a fire-themed wrestler. He goes out and he's a real character actor. He actually got his body temperature to be a resting 105 to nail this role.
Indeed, Damien, this is science. It is very rare, but it is a known condition called cold urticaria. And in this case, it happened to a gentleman in Colorado who stepped out of a hot shower into the cold air, and he was found by his family on the floor, struggling to breathe and covered in hives. He had recently moved. You might be like, wait, how the fuck did he live his life without getting cold? He had recently moved from a warmer tropical country and then came to Colorado. And apparently he had known he had these kind of issues because his skin would break out in hives when he went out in the cold, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes if it got bad enough, he would, you know, his throat would start to close up. And that happened. He literally went into anaphylaxis. They had to rush him, like the paramedics had to come and rush him to the hospital and like the whole nine yards, just as if he was like the fucking Macaulay Culkin getting stung by bees. He almost died from an allergic reaction to the cold.
Yeah, do you see the doctor? Like, we have your medicine for you. We got this blanket. We all pitched in.
Yeah, right?
A big baby needs his blanket.
The test, by the way, like their super scientific test to see if you're allergic to the cold is literally they just put an ice cube on your skin and they leave it there for 5 minutes. And if they pull it off and your skin is like red and raised and bumpy, then you have this condition and then they can diagnose you and that's that.
Doctor, I have goosebumps. Does this mean anything?
Well, I mean, I have been told I'm a pretty attractive doctor.
I thought you were going to make a children's horror book series joke.
No. I want to come back with a new Goosebumps series, but that's like really dark and like there's a lot of child murder and like sexual slavery and stuff, but just still call it Goosebumps with really fun animated covers. Really fuck some kids up.
R.L. Stein's Glistine Maxwell is where now?
I just imagine like a really petrified look of a father reading to his 9-year-old son as the kid's about to go to bed, and the father's eyes are super wide as he like turns the last page of his book, the book, and he's like, and that's how I finally got rid of the goosebumps on my dead dick.
Yeah, the child's vomiting in the corner.
Article number 2, climate researchers looking at carbon footprints have found out that out of all scientific researchers, paleontologists take the most flights per year. Damien, is this science or bad science?
My gut instinct is to say that this is science, but I will not say that this is bad science, because most of the scientists that I personally chase around trying to intimidate are paleontologists, and they're always flying to other cities to get away from me. So I completely understand that.
I mean, you do tend to throw full-grown men at them occasionally, so that is a reason to avoid you.
The human body is the perfect projectile. People want to catch you to prevent damage.
That's why sometimes I wrap the person in barbed wire first, then throw them at them, and then it's real. It does a lot of damage.
Yeah. Listen, I throw a chair at you, you're going to want to get out of the way of that, right? But I throw a human at you, there's a part of you that wants to stop that human from dying, because they almost certainly die. By the way, that's why sometimes you throw a baby at them. It's like a fastball special. They're going to do everything they can to home in on that baby, unless they got some real problems.
That's why sometimes I glue like 5 knives to a baby and throw them and call them a baby throwing star.
Yeah, they don't allow that no more. Thanks, Obama.
This one is indeed bad science. Just reviewing, we've actually covered this before. Almost without exception, the number one part of any individual person's carbon footprint is an airline flight. One cross-country airline flight is essentially the same as your entire carbon footprint, meaning all the energy you use, the gas you use, the lights and electricity, the stuff to get your food to where it is. It is that for half of a year. So if you took every amount of energy it takes to keep you as a person doing your thing, watching Netflix and driving your car and doing all that stuff.
My jet fuel-powered butler.
Yeah, for if you take that for 6 months, that is how much one single cross-country airline flight takes, because it burns a lot of energy to get you across the country. So they were looking at who actually moves across the country the most, and it turns out it's climate researchers.
Damn it, you had me. I was going to joke that it was that was going to be my anti-science heel joke. It's going to be the climate research scientists, because who watches The Watchmen, I guess?
Yeah. Well, so it is funny, like they have to go around for their research a lot. Obviously, if you're collecting, you know, ice core samples in Greenland, you're taking a lot of airline flights. Specifically, it looks like they take about 9 flights per year, as opposed to about 8 or less for your average researcher, I love the bitter irony of it. They also, however, tend to offset these by taking less personal flights on their own time and also making other climate conscious choices in terms of their purchasing and their cars.
Poor people don't take personal flights as well. So step it up. Like, poor people are the most green people out there.
You think that, but some of the like evidence shows that maybe not so much, because they also tend to, like, newer cars are more fuel efficient. Hell, a lot of newer cars are electric, you know, whereas who's driving 35-year-old F-450 diesels, right? Like, it's not the Wall Street dude.
All right, somewhere out there, your average poor person's driving a 1989 Corolla and saving the planet and not taking any cross-country sure. flights and not eating lots of meat because they can't afford it. Make everybody poor.
It's very interesting. I just love those little, like, that'll be a great thing you should keep in your hip pocket next time you're at a cocktail party, which, you know, probably won't be for like 3 years. But like next time when the plague goes away, you're at a cocktail party, you can throw that out there. Like, hey, what researcher do you think has the biggest carbon footprint in terms of flying around places? And, you know, they'll probably have a bunch of different guesses. And you'd be like, nah, it's climate researchers.
Interesting how only a handful of us in this room survived the American Civil War. Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I survived just by getting thrown at people repeatedly. That's the only reason I made it through.
Anti-scientist heel, can you throw me? I can throw you, but not at somebody. I'm going to throw you. I'm going to do something I've never done before. I'm going to throw you to safety, brother.
And then he threw me into a wall. I'm sorry, that was an accident. I missed. That was a genuine accident. He's unconscious. Hold on, wake up. I'll throw your body again.
I'll throw you to the hospital. Article number 3. Researchers have discovered a 1,000-year-old set of human nerve cells that have been turned into glass. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science. You keep pulling stories from my former wrestling tag team partners. I see Captain Flat Earth Speed Freak. I see has also made it into your science articles. That's great. Oh, yeah, he was an amphetamine-themed...
Oh, I see, that type of glass. He actually turned his brain cells, into meth itself, also known as glass.
You're going to find him taking apart electronics no matter what time you go to his house, brother.
So let me ask you, though, I did say 2,000-year-old. That would make you a bit older than I had originally assumed, anti-science heel.
I am not so much immortal, but in a being that is channeled to fight science and learning wherever it exists, wherever it springs up throughout humanity, you will find me and my tag team partners beating up nerds.
You are, to reference this week's earlier episode, you are the wrestler version of Time Cop.
I don't understand the reference.
And you know what, anti-science heel? You're right. This is science. This is human brain tissue that was turned into glass. And you might be thinking, when I saw this headline, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? How in the world could your neurons be turned into glass? Well, this individual 2,000 years ago happened to live in Pompeii.
Ah.
More accurately, a little town very close to Pompeii. And when that super hot gas came flooding over, it literally crystallized him and turned his brain, or parts of it, into glass. This is so cool because we can actually see neuroanatomy of a 2,000-year-old person's brain. That's crazy. Like, what other opportunities do we have to see this other than endocasts and things like that? And occasionally things get fossilized, but not to this degree. Like, actually turning the individual neurons and nerves into glass is really neat. And you can look at a picture of a brain of a living, functioning human being that was running around in Roman times 2,000 years ago.
The people of Pompeii were known for their high levels of sand ingestion, so this doesn't surprise me.
Them old sand eaters.
Yeah. They thought it was spices. These people are idiots. Like, this is sand, not salt. Oh my God, my teeth. Ah!
Everybody brags about Italian food now, but it took a while to get to where it is.
It didn't start off great.
Article number 4. New research into the genetics of ancient dogs suggests that all dogs evolved from African wolves close to 25,000 years ago. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. All dogs come from the union of a cat and a dog. All the boys are dogs, all the girls are cats. Everybody knows this. It's basic science. Two European wolves. two European wolves can't mate because they're both dudes. You gotta have like a European mountain lion and a European wolf.
God, are you a close-minded motherfucker, huh? What, are you voting against marriage equality now, anti-science heel?
Oh, listen, I don't believe you should mix up your African wolves and your European mountain lions. Let me put it that way. Yeah, that's right. I'm also an anti...
That's racist, yeah.
I'm also an anti-peace heel. I'm also just a super racist heel, so...
Well, that is too bad, but I do have good news. That is correct, anti-science heel, meaning that the anti-science heel has scored a perfect victory. If only Damien was able to pull off this type of perfection at any point during the past 7 years that we have been playing this game.
Oh, he talked several times during this. Damien broke character several times.
He did, but never to give answers, only to follow up later with what some would call crappy ad-lib, but never did he actually give an answer. That was all the anti-science heel. So, anti-science heel, you joined the proud list of scientists who have beat Damien, me myself who have played Damien and beat him, just the world in general. You joined the circle of people who have actually won a game of I Call BS. Again, a circle in which Damien is not a part, but you yourself now are.
Okay, this is Damien again, you can tell this is not the gruff voice anti-science heel.
The guy who didn't win the game, yeah.
Oh, no, I won, because here's the unmasking. I am now unmasking myself. By the way, this is a Zoom call, so you've actually known it was me talking to you the whole time. Yet are playing dumb for the fans.
That's funny, because I'm seeing you, Damien, not the anti-science heel, so that's weird that you would even say that.
Okay, what do you see now? Describe what you see. Let's use that imagination.
I see Damien doing a bad impression of the anti-science heel.
No, you son of a bitch. Yeah, see, Damien, and a bad impression at that. He was here. He nailed it. Like, I believed that guy hated science.
I have no worries about you tossing me at a police officer. I'll tell you that right now.
I'm a strong guy, but you're right. I don't know that I could do 250 above my head.
No.
And then use you as a bullet or a torpedo.
Yeah, and frankly, I don't respect you enough to stand still for it. Indeed, this is bad science. But a new paper does look at a bunch of ancient dog genetics. Again, this is another one of those really interesting fields that I love to see because it also coincides with humans. Like, you can actually think of dogs as being an artifact, like a human artifact, because they are essentially created by human societies. They're to the extent that a stone tool is the human modified version of that rock so that it's sharper or able to perform a function. A dog is the human modified version of a wolf. Whether that modification was purposeful, we don't know. You know, it could just be wolves following human beings around and the ones that were the nicest got the most scraps, et cetera, et cetera. But regardless, dogs are a product of human beings. And so when we look at the history of dogs, we are looking at the history of human beings. Now, a lot of stuff has come out recently in terms of dog genetics. The reason dog genetics are so hard is because dogs have interbred so much that the current dog groups are so muddled up, we can't really tell much from them. They've all interbred so much. So really, you can only do work on ancient dog genetics. That's the only way to get this kind of info. And more, we are finding ancient dogs and able to sequence the genomes and then look at them. We talked about a paper a little while ago showing that sled dogs had diversified from other dogs as far as 9,000 years ago, which was way earlier than we would have called. This finds similar findings, that there are different dog groupings even 10,000 years ago. And it looks like dogs might have, and again, everything is muddled right now, so we're not sure, been domesticated at least twice, once in Western Eurasia, once in Eastern Eurasia. Since then, those groups have, you know, kind of bred together and stuff. The other thing you have to remember is dogs and wolves can still breed to this day, and throughout dog history have been interbreeding, meaning that when dogs come to an area, some will go feral, they'll go and they'll breed into wolf populations. Wolf populations will breed into them. The genetics pass back and forth. And because of that, even wolf genetics are all muddled up with our domestic dog genetics every time we bring dogs to a place, including, by the way, if you've ever seen a black wolf in North America, our North American wolves didn't used to be able to have that. They did not represent a phenotype that would show an all-black wolf. That actually came from the breeding of domestic dogs or feral dogs into North American wolf populations, and that's where those genetics come from. So even some things you think of as totally natural wolf elements are just relics of our dogs breeding into wolf populations.
No, really, I won. Come on.
What? I mean, I will say this. You did win in the sense that you did not participate in this game, which is the closest you've ever come to winning, is just to not even play.
Okay, that's it. I'm just not going to show up next time.
That's kind of how I feel you play the game every time, is just to not show up.
Please, Damien, physically don't show up for once. It'd be a nice change of pace from you just intellectually not showing up every time.
I've gotten so many emails, I think, that are verbatim for what you just said.
I wrote them. I'm writing the negative emails about me.
I am the one who writes.
What's your long game?
Oh, dear. A very interesting thing as we are unraveling this, we're finding out that some dog separations are much older than originally thought. This actually supports that, this research. And we're finding more and more that we can kind of glimpse out different human being movements because humans tend to bring dogs with them. But every once in a while, that rule doesn't work. Like the Polynesians, they brought their dogs with them almost everywhere they went, all these different islands, except they go to Madagascar and they adopt local African dogs. Why? We don't know. Certain groups that we were looking at here, you get the Turkish groups that we've talked about before. You know, almost all Europeans now aren't pure Europeans. It's one of the reasons, like, the white supremacy is so funny, is because all those guys are still mainly Turkish. There are hunter-gatherers in Europe, and then all of a sudden a bunch of farmers from Anatolia, from Turkey, sweep in, and they breed in and kind of displace the rest of the population. Well, they brought their dogs with them. So those dogs then bred in with local European hunter-gatherer dogs, and some of the European breeds are that mixture of, you know, Turkish invading dogs and hunter-gatherer dogs, just like most Europeans themselves are a mixture of Turkish invading agriculturalists and the native European hunter-gatherers. So very interesting. Some areas, again, aren't like that. Sometimes we see people moving in and adopting different dogs or different dog groupings. That's very, very interesting. But what I think papers like this show is they basically show a baseline of what the genetics look like at different snapshots in time based on certain ancient dog remains that we have. As we start filling in this map, we're going to be able to narrow down when and where dogs were domesticated, likely multiple domestication events, and some groups that went totally extinct. Remember, when human beings came to the Americas, they brought dogs with them. Those dogs are essentially all extinct. There's little bits of them in a few breeds, like the Chihuahua, the Peruvian Hairless, the Carolina Singing Dog, but they're just bits of them. The vast majority of all of that DNA, of all of the New World dogs that range from Alaska to the tip of South America, is gone. It's gone. It's fucking extinct. So there are entire lineages that went out, and once we start looking at this ancient DNA, we can pull that out and kind of see the history of dogs, including those ones that didn't make it to today.
So once we gave Native Americans the chance to upgrade dogs from a Chihuahua to literally anything else, they jumped at the opportunity. Like, oh, God, get these. I mean, yes, I love this animal, blah, 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 but give me the Doberman.
Yeah, that's just common sense. But, well, in reality, the reality is the dogs were varied throughout the North and South America and Central America, too. Like, very different. Difference in sizes, everything. You had regular-sized dogs, the whole nine yards. It's just that the ones that happened to survive, or, again, these aren't, Chihuahuas aren't directly those dogs, but they are the ones, they're some of the ones that have the most, that have a lot of genetics from that area, or some genetics from that area. They're just the ones that survive. You know, there were bigger regular dogs. The Carolina dog, Carolina Singing Dog or whatever it is, that dog just looks like a regular dog. Like, it's a regular-sized, coyote-sized dog, right? Most of it is still Eurasian dog breed genetics, but some of it is ancient American genetics. So there was a wide range of dogs. It might be that the dogs suffered the same thing we did, which is that those dogs were living in Eurasia in really close quarters, and pandemic diseases, dog smallpox swept through, wiped out a bunch of those dogs. And so when we brought the dogs here, their dog diseases went into the Native American dogs and wiped out the dog breeds, just like it did with a lot of the tribal groups.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Carolina Singing Dog right now, or the Carolina Dog.
Yeah.
And it looks like a completely normal dog, unlike the Mexican Hairless and the Chihuahua, yes, which look like pretty freaky dogs. If you've never seen a dog before, they're very unique dogs.
Yes.
Carolina Dog looks normal. It also says that it's known as the Yellow Dog, the Yaller Dog, the American Dingo, and the Dixie Dingo. And I love that name because I picture a dog with an American flag tank top and a Make America Great Again hat running off with a baby.
The Dixie Dingo sounds like a very
great wrestling name
word for a mentally challenged person in the South.
I love that. That's great.
Although, wait. So this, so you're saying to me that this Dixie Dingo does not currently have a tag team partner? That's what I'm hearing.
Oh, do you know old Susan around the holler? Oh, bless her heart. Her son's one of them Dixie Dingos. I mean, he's a sweet boy, though. He sells wrapping paper by the side of the road, but he's a nice boy.
And I hear his SoundCloud DJing is taking off, bless his heart.
Oh, dear. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 507, where you learned all about how you can actually be allergic to cold air, how climate change researchers actually have some of the biggest carbon footprints of any scientific researchers, how human brain nerve cells 2,000 years ago were turned into glass, and how the genetics of ancient dogs are unraveling the history of their evolution. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 508.
Hi, the anti-science heel here with my tag team partner, the Dixie Dingo, and we're going to be continuing our Beat Up Nerds Across America tour. Find us at MIT next week.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.